Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We are here to talk about
Demonic.
Released in 2015, I think.
Yeah.
Starring
lots of people.
Maria Bello. Who I love. And yes. Lights Out. She was great.
Yes.
And
she was also excellent in Coyote Ugly.
I liked her in Thank You for Smoking.
Oh, I've only seen that once. I don't really remember it very well.
Yeah, because she's just like, what do you call it? A political gal.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a fun movie. Mm. Maybe a little bit relevant in this point, too.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, yeah. So, before we get started, do you have anything new going on?
I don't know. I feel like it's one of those times where it's like a lot going on and also nothing going on. You know, like obviously there's always school, which has been, you know, challenging. I have a challenging group this year. February, the calendar was just a fucking dumpster fire. And now we're looking ahead to March. It's like, oh, look, March is a train wreck, too. And so that's, you know, keeps things interesting, but it's also frustrating because, as you know, like teaching is about a lot about planning. And it is very frustrating to put effort and time into planning to try and do a good job at educating children. And then the schedule's like, oh, fuck you. You actually don't get this time or this time or this time. And you have to do this and you have to do this. And then this has to change to this time. And I'm like, hey, fuck you right back. Okay. You just don't expect them to learn anything.
You know, sometimes I wish, I'm going to interrupt you for a moment. I want to have like an hour and a half or a part of the day that cannot be interrupted.
Yeah.
It's like unadulterated. There's no assemblies. There are no switcheroos. Like everything that is time that everyone has to, it's basically untouchable.
Yeah, that would be really nice.
Yeah.
I would appreciate that quite a lot.
Right.
But it does not exist.
Why not?
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the school year's going okay. But I probably will not miss this group once they move on to seventh grade. Yeah. I see my students from last year, like going down the hall, and they're still so sweet. And so, you know, like come and check on me and say hi to me and update me and things. And I'm like, come back. Please come back. I hate my class.
These jabronis got to get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's okay. And then we're, you know, and kind of a pretty monumental time in parenting with, you know, getting to the point of knowing what our son is going to be doing next year, you know, getting like college acceptances trickling in here and there and, you know, successes and disappointments and, you know, still only yet have half of our results. And, you know, it's like, it's wonderful and it's nerve wracking. And also I try not to think about him leaving and, you know, just the fact that that time in our life is like coming to a close, like having
children.
Yeah. Like they're not, you know, he's essentially an adult and Grace is not far behind. And it's like, we don't have children anymore. So, you know, that obviously.
It's a whole new era.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing, but it's also bittersweet. And if I think about the wrong thing, then I just want to, you know, get in bed and cry for 2 days. So that's kind of emotional going on for us these days.
Yeah. I'm a little farther behind than you with these.
It'll be here before you know it, though.
I know. Well, now that's like, they're both now teenagers.
Yeah.
The teenager era. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, mad about it.
Yeah, I'm mad about it.
Because they still like to, you know, talk to me and be like, how are you doing? And I'm like, what? I thought you were supposed to be terrible. Yeah. You seemed pretty awesome to me. I mean, things could change, but
yeah.
So far, no, so good.
Tommy and Grace weren't difficult teenagers. Like, you know, you hear the horror stories and everything. And I feel like, you know, they both had rough period. Like, Tommy was very emotional and challenging when he was, like, a littler guy. Like, I would say, like, the 5 to 7 age range. And then mm-hmm. Grace was, we weren't sure how things were going to go with her, like when she's around like 10, 11, something like that. Mm-hmm. But the teenage years have been pretty solid.
That's so, not bad then.
Yeah. Good. I'm not mad about that either. And it is a beautiful thing to see how your relationships with them get to change and grow. You know, you do say goodbye to some things that were special, but they're replaced by new things that, you know, you didn't expect or you didn't think about, you know, being ahead of you. And like for, you know, for Valentine's Day when they were littler, always like I would give Tommy a Valentine present and Tom would give Grace a Valentine present. And, mm-hmm. You know, obviously that's something that's become less of a thing over the years. But then this year, Tommy, you know, he gave me flowers and he gave me a card that he had written. And it was just like he's so good with words. Like he and I have had conversations about like love languages and things like that. And how, you know, I'm very much words of affirmation because I'm a very verbal person. Mm-hmm. And he is like me in that respect. And so he's very, very good and very comfortable at expressing feelings and love and appreciation verbally or in writing. Mm-hmm. And so it was just this, like, you know, I like read it 3 times and cried every time. But like saying how, you know, that I was his first Valentine and that I showed him what it means to be like loving and caring. And like he thanked me for giving him an example with me and Tom to, you know, to strive for in his relationships and everything. And it was just like,
aww,
that's really sweet, but thank you. I gotta go now. You know? And so that's the thing where like, you know, to see them growing into somebody that you are proud of, and what they're turning into, and you're like, oh, you know, I did a pretty good job. We did a pretty good job, and you're kind of an amazing person, and I you know, don't have to like not tell people you're my kid.
Like, I don't know who that is.
yeah. So that's the like it's the highs and the lows of you know your kids growing up,
parenthood,
yeah,
all of that stuff.
But what's new with you?
Let's see. I've been reading a lot of weird books, trying to read more. Weird books,
okay.
Well, I think cause last year, well, the past few years, because I used to be an avid reader. I'd read all the time. But then I started listening to podcasts all the time, and that would take up a lot of my, like, I would play podcasts when I'm doing my mundane, boring chores and stuff like that. So I'm trying to split it a little more evenly where I'll listen to an audiobook while I'm doing stuff. And I find I'm glad, you know, because I have my usual shows that I listen to, but sometimes I need something else because I'm like, I have to do all this laundry. Like, I need to listen to something because I can't just sit here with my thoughts or else I'll get depressed.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the state of the world.
Yeah, people are noticing like a big gaping hole in what we're not talking about in terms of what's new in the world.
I know, especially if you're an educator. Yeah. So I've been listening to a lot of books and podcasts and stuff like that. And Victor had he asked me what I wanted to do for my birthday, like birthday get together. We had it last night, and Katie and her husband came and some other friends too. And Victor was like, what do you want for dinner? I can cook whatever you want. I'm like, I just want a charcuterie board and like dips and chips.
Yeah, that's good charcuterie. Yeah.
He was like, sounds great.
Yes.
I don't have to make anything.
I'm
awesome.
On it.
Yeah. So it was really fun, and we hung out, had drinks and nice wine, and then played dice games. But it was like super chill. Everyone was gone by 9, which is what I'm all about. I'm like,
you're like, I've chosen my friends well.
I know. They're like, no one lingering. Time to go. I'm like, awesome. We got in our pajamas and watched some more Boardwalk Empire and then went to bed. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great. Great birthday. 42 is not not too shabby so far.
Oh, yeah. This is that tiny window of time when you and I are the same age, because I won't be 43 until June.
Yeah. Victor made the point of being like, you're officially 5 years older than me.
And then you slapped him across the face.
Until I'm 38. I'm like, I hate you. I hate you so much. And then I'm like, you have gray hair, more gray hair than me, and you're bald, so shut up. So he's like, I'm going to leave. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so you're doing the recap this week.
I sure am. And I'm curious because as we were departing the gathering last night and confirming that we were going to be recording, it seemed like there was some comments that were passed that I didn't really catch on to, that you weren't a big fan of this movie. So I can't wait to hear more about that. So feel free to jump in with your perspectives at any point in my synopsis.
I like the main actor, though.
Yes.
But he's Schitt's from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
But I didn't like his performance that much.
Okay. Well, let's get into it. So it was one where I tried to throw out the argument, but it's James Wan, but it's not really James Wan. He was one of many producers attached to the project.
He's just the biggest name.
Yeah. And he did not direct it. And so while I love it and I think it's an awesome movie, you can't really claim it's a James Wan movie. Anyhow.
Of The Conjuring and Insidious.
Oh, certainly not. Yeah.
And Aquaman.
we'll forget about that
big
one.
Big question mark. Aquaman?
Mm. Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah. He did that? I don't know.
All right. So this one opens with audio and news clippings of a 1988 Louisiana tragedy where a woman named Martha Livingston killed four friends before hanging herself in a ritualistic event. And again, this is all like, you know, you're hearing audio, you're seeing clippings from different newspapers rolling across the screen under the credits. Some say that the demonic cult behavior had paranormal roots, that the house where the deaths occurred became the site of supernatural occurrences afterwards. So it's all just laying the groundwork for that. Next, an old-timey street lamp outdoors gutters out in the night, and a man pulls up through swirly mist to check out reports of noises at a spooky house. So it's just this, like, good old boy in his truck, like, oh, well, I've heard noises next door. I gotta go check it out. He finds the front door ajar.
The way he was talking kind of reminded me of the guy who was like, don't go to that camp. There's bones there. Or what, I can't remember.
Y'all doomed. Yeah. He had a little bit of the Harbinger vibe.
Yeah, Harbinger.
But also very, a little bit Scooby-Doo too. Like, he was like, oh, getting out of here.
Yeah.
So yeah, he finds the front door of the house ajar and the lock and chain that was on the outside broken on the ground. We cut to a gas station down the road and we meet really our main character, Detective Mark Lewis, who the actor's name is Frank Grillo. He's very recognizable from the Captain America movies in the Marvel Universe. He was also in Purge Anarchy.
I watched that.
Wait, no. Anarchy or Election Year?
Election Year. He was the guy who was, like, in charge of her safety the whole time.
Like, her protector or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I like him a lot. And he's good looking, but in, like, a kind of a grizzled, gritty way. So I think that he fits into these roles well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a police detective. He gets a call to respond to reported disturbances at a house down the road. And soon he's pulling up at the same house that we've already seen behind, you know, the guy's truck. And the first man tells him that there's blood inside the house. So inside, Detective Lewis indeed finds blood, a mess of items all over the place. You know, things are all topsy turvy, and he finds a girl dead on the floor. He calls for backup and continues to check the house. He finds a computer station set up with all of these, like, screens and equipment. And then he finds another body, a man's body, on the kitchen floor. And then a third body grotesquely positioned in an upstairs bedroom. He then follows the sound of a music box playing into another bedroom where a final man is laying on the floor. And he, you know, approaches this body to, like, check it or whatever. And what I called in a solid jump scare to kick things off, the man suddenly lunges upward, like, oh my God, he's not dead, and runs past Lewis, trying to flee from the house. But he falls down the stairs and lands at the bottom, where he lays gasping on the floor. And then the scene fades out. Mm-hmm. So we've got all bodies, bodies, bodies. And then this one survivor in this house. Now the screen reads 1 week earlier. Mm-hmm. So Michelle is another main character played by actress Cody Horn, which I love her in Magic Mike. But if you're a fan of The Office, you would also recognize her as an intern on a couple episodes of The Office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's Michelle and her brother Sam are interviewing Michelle's boyfriend John, who, as you mentioned, is Dustin Milligan of Schitt's Creek fame. Like, such a cutie. Love him on that show. This is a highly different character. Mm-hmm. but he's still very attractive.
Well, I love him so much. He's so funny in that show. And I don't know. I've watched that show a few times over and over again.
I've seen it twice, I think, from start to finish.
I mean, I have like stickers referencing that show. So I saw him like, oh, I'm excited.
And then disappointment followed. Okay. Anyway, so
maybe comedy is more of your wheelhouse.
So they're interviewing John about visions that he has had of his mother, who's been dead a few years, in some strange house. They have a plan to take John to the house from his visions to explore them further. But then now John is pissed when he finds out that Michelle's ex, Brian, is also involved in this plan or this project that they're going to do. But Michelle and Sam coax John into still coming, claiming that it must be what his dead mother wants him to do, that's what these visions mean, that she's trying to tell him something, she's trying to show him something.
Okay.
So he agrees to go. Now we cut back to Detective Lewis. And so we have the time frame jumping back and forth quite a bit in this movie. Mm-hmm. And then also we have a little mix in of found footage elements. And so it's kind of, I think that makes it very cool. But the two time periods that we're jumping between are not far apart, right? Because like the flashback scenes are what happened in the house immediately before the detective arrives. Mm-hmm. So they're very close in time, but it's like we're seeing, you know, the weaving together of what happened in the house and then the detective investigating what happened in the house.
Right. And it was like earlier that day.
Yeah.
That
exactly. Like a very short time frame.
Or young adult people investigating.
So now we're back to the investigation point. Detective Lewis is looking at Michelle's license that they found inside the house, while another cop refers to her as, quote, the suspect's girlfriend. But Michelle is not there. She's not one of the bodies or people found in the house. Mm-hmm. Cops are also trying to pull prints from what they're calling the murder weapon, and also trying to get footage from the 13 cameras that they've found positioned around the house. But so far, all the footage is scrambled. Lewis heads into a barn where John, who we know is the suspect, is handcuffed and is looking really rough. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look good. He's sitting in a folding chair with a contractor's light pointed at him, as well as a camera on a tripod. Lewis questions him, and John tells him that Brian, like Michelle, is missing from the scene. So all the other bodies in the house are all the other, you know, friends in their group, but Brian and Michelle are both missing. Mm-hmm. And then John also tells Lewis that, quote, it was the house. The house did something to them. And John is crying, saying they woke the house up. And he begs Lewis to find Michelle. You have to find her. You have to make sure she's safe. Go. You got to find her. And so Lewis's next call is to his jilted date for the evening, who is police psychologist Dr. Elizabeth Klein, who is Maria Bello's character, who is immediately on her way to the scene. Mm-hmm. So they're like dating, but also like they both work for the police department.
Right. She's like, you stood me up, you son of a bitch.
And then he's like, I got bodies. And she's like, oh, I'll be right there.
He's like, remember the old Livingston?
Livingston, yeah.
House. And he's like, there's a bunch of bodies. She's like, I'll be right there.
She's like, cool.
I'm on my way.
Okay, so now we're earlier again, and this is the first like found footage sort of portion. It's handheld camera footage showing the team gathering to head to the house. So we start meeting the other people that end up as part of this group. So Jules and Donnie. Donnie, played by Aaron Yu, who's someone that I love. He's always just like a bit guy, but he was in the remakes of both Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, and he's just a very, I think he's really cute, and he's always just like that little extra, you know, either nerdy, well, he's always nerdy, but in different ways, mm-hmm. Guy, and he pops up in a lot of scary movies, so I really like him.
I didn't recognize him.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, he's a cutie. So we meet Jules and Donnie, and then we also see Brian for the first time, and he is, like, just a total prick. Like, he's Michelle's ex-boyfriend, and he's just being an asshole. He's being an asshole to John, and then he's also just, like, being just kind of shitty to Michelle as well, and he's just a dick.
Yeah, and he's also not great at acting.
Yeah, he's also, like, I didn't bother to write down what he's been in, but you see him and you're like, oh, I've seen that face before. Like, he's just here and there, you know, impressing anybody with anything.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is he just basically had no redeeming qualities.
Yeah, his character.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, I don't care what happens to you.
Yeah. Okay, and so now, forward in time, as the cops continue to try to recover more footage from the house, Elizabeth arrives at the scene. Lewis takes her to talk to John, and she gets him talking about what he remembers. Now it's earlier in the day again, and John is telling the camera that his mom was actually friends growing up with Martha Livingston, and that that's his connection to the house, that, like, his mom grew up in the same small town, and so that's why he's explaining that, like, his visions of his mom are in the Livingston house. Because his mom knew her.
Mm-hmm.
And next, the group is hiking through the woods with their equipment, which I'm like, clearly you're able to drive right up to this house because we saw two people do it at the beginning of the film. I don't know why these folks, with all of this stuff that they're carrying, decide they need to park way far off and hike through the woods to get to the house.
I don't know.
It was an odd choice.
They're like, we need a wood scene.
We do.
So they're going to make everyone walk for no reason.
Yeah. And then they did add an element there because they in the woods, they're encountering all these sets of chimes hanging in all the trees that Jules says are meant to beckon the dead. And John pranks them that he like grabs the chimes and like fakes out that it hurt his hand. So he's like the skeptic in the group where, you know, Brian and Jules are very much like, we believe in the afterlife. We believe in the supernatural. And their goal is to find proof. Like, they just want to capture evidence of this thing that they believe in and most people don't.
Wasn't Michelle kind of in that mindset as well? Because she was, like, part of their group.
Yeah, she was. But I feel like she and her brother were kind of, like, a little bit more reasonable about it. Like, maybe they believed in the afterlife and the supernatural, but they didn't have this, like, intense, like, we got to prove it. We got to get evidence. Like, this is important. You know, that was a big part of why I think that, like, the times that Brian was being a dick was because he was like, everybody, like, makes fun of us and blah. Like, he had a real chip on his shoulder about it.
Poor baby.
Yeah. I feel really sad for him.
He's like, my girlfriend broke up with me.
No, she's with a guy that's
this loser.
Way better looking than me.
I'm a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not.
So arriving at the house, Jules notes the gas street lamp that we saw earlier and tells the group that back in the day it was lit to indicate that the master was home and the house was open for guests. In real time, in the investigation, Elizabeth points out that John's group, she's like, you came to the house to do a seance, just like Martha and her friends came to the house to do a seance, like kind of suggesting that someone in their group was trying to recreate the murders as well.
So, earlier,
Donnie cuts the chain on the door. The team enters the house and they begin to set up all of their surveillance. Later, now, and again, we're like popping back and forth. Now we're in the investigation where John is still talking to Elizabeth and he confesses to her that his mother was inside the house the night of the murders. She was the only one to escape.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, he told his friends, oh, she just knew Martha Livingston. But at this point, he reveals that she was actually in the house when all of this went down.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, shit.
And that looks really bad.
Yeah, like, really bad
for
him.
Trying to recreate a horrible event that happened in this town.
Exactly.
No big deal. I don't look suspicious at all.
Not at all. Fine, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're back where they're setting up the cameras. All that progresses. Jules notices a cross on the wall is inverted, of course. She turns it upright. But after she leaves the room, the camera shows it slowly turning upside down again all by itself. So, like, there's already, like, oh, okay, so this place is fucking saturated with demons. this is a bad house.
But nobody notices.
We do also see at another point a spooky face in the shadows behind Michelle at one point, so it's like they're just walking around setting things up, and it is apparent to the viewer that this place is just bubbling with bad stuff.
Yeah. It made me think a lot of Hell House.
Yeah.
LLC, that one.
Oh, God, that movie's so good.
I know. I agree. And just like random, like, oh, was there something there down the hall?
Yeah.
I think that's why nobody noticed.
Yeah. Okay. Wait, isn't that mannequin supposed to be not alive? Why is it walking down the hall?
Remember the clowns?
the clowns. Yep. Oh, such a good one. Okay. All right. So back in the investigation, the cops have recovered more disturbing footage, including Sam telling the camera that they're locked in the house and he's got an axe before getting said axe in the back. And so we're like, okay, so we know Sam's one of the bodies in the house, so we definitely know he's not the killer,
not the perpetrator.
Yeah, but we don't see who kills him.
Yeah, and you don't know who he is, so it's like,
yeah, it could be any of the men. Mm-hmm. We've got three other guys in the group,
right?
But Donnie is also dead in the house, so it's either John or Brian, because they're the only two that aren't bodies in the house.
Right.
But Elizabeth, in her conversation with John, tells John there's no footage, like there's nothing on the cameras, and so she's, you know, misleading him to just kind of keep him talking or whatever, rather than being like, well, we saw this.
Mm-hmm.
And so John continues his story. Now, back earlier, he's helping Michelle position a camera and his flashlight goes out. And in some black and white handheld footage, we see a door slam on its own. And then Jules hurries into the room because they're like screaming and they all see another door slowly open by itself. And so they're like, OK, well, your shit's going down, and they're observing it. Jules speaks to the spirits because she's like, what are you trying to tell us? What are you doing here? We're friendly.
Show yourself.
Yeah. And she's the you know, medium of the group. Really. So she's, you know, they're there to communicate and to try and get evidence of the spirits in the house. So she's like all in for this. And then Michelle screams because she feels something touching her leg.
Mm-hmm.
Now back in the investigation, Lewis is kind of musing over Sam's statement that they were locked in, like locked inside the house. And so he's like, okay, if they were locked in, how did Brian get out? Because Brian and Michelle are the ones missing.
Mm-hmm.
And he guesses that somebody might use the quote milk chute to escape. So like this little, you know, it's an old timey house where the milkman would come deliver milk and it would go into this little cubby in the back of the house. And so he goes to check it out and he finds it's entirely smeared with blood. So Lewis confronts John with this information and accuses John of being the killer. And in his protests that, you know, that he didn't do anything, John blurts out that Michelle is pregnant. So we're like, okay, this is just getting better and better.
Good news. And the detective is like, yeah, domestic partners of pregnant women never go crazy and kill their significant other. It's definitely not the number one reason women are killed. It's definitely not by their husbands and boyfriends.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry. He's like, I would never. She's pregnant. And you're like, that makes me more suspicious of you. But that's where my mind goes.
Yeah, you're not good at this whole convincing us it's not you.
Yeah. The house went crazy.
But I mean, truly, at this point, the way the story is being presented, I think that, you know, their intention was for us to, you know, everything that's being presented is like Brian's the culprit. John was one of the victims. Michelle is also missing.
And John was like it's John, right?
Yeah.
A very nice guy, but he came into this kind of a skeptic and was like not fully buying into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy's kind of seen as somebody who's a little aggressive.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
And jerky. Mm-hmm. And someone who has something to prove.
Yeah.
So it's like, what would happen to somebody who maybe lost it a little bit and had something to prove, an axe to grind and a chip on their shoulder?
Yeah.
Something not great, probably.
So we're like, okay, so like, you know, Brian's the bad guy, but Lewis is a detective and John is there. And, you know, the information that he's gathering from his investigation that John is sharing with Elizabeth, like Lewis is not, he's not sold on John just being Mr. Innocent Victim who happened to survive.
Right.
Okay. But everything that's being presented is really supporting the narrative that Brian is the killer.
Well, exactly, because the whole movie it's setting up for us to hate him.
Right. And really, yeah, that's why they make him an asshole.
We hate you.
Yeah.
Everything he says, he's like, meh, 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 meh. And he's like,
told you not to touch anything.
And, well, also, These are all my own biases. I also really don't like the ghost hunter, Zach Bagans.
Oh, really?
Do you know who he is?
No.
He's like a brunette guy. He goes into like supposedly haunted places and he's like, reveal yourself. You know, what do you have to prove? You know, like, what are you showing me? And he's very like aggressive and he's like, ah, like maybe I'm exaggerating. But I also feel like he's a little bit like that too. But that guy, I think, was trying to emulate him a little bit and make us, that makes me dislike him even more. Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of stereotypical, like in a ghost hunting show, there's a guy who's like, hey, do you want to show yourself? You know, and
yeah, all the machismo.
Yeah.
That, and you know, we just love, women are naturally attracted to.
Yeah.
And we want to be in a relationship with that person.
Yes. It's usually like a cool guy with the dark black hair and he's like wearing like a cool graphic tee and he's like, I don't even care. But he does care.
He cares a lot. Who hurt you?
So maybe not like him even more. Not. I'm like, Zach Bagans. What's your name? What's the character's name? Zach?
No. Oh, Brian.
No, I'm kidding. Oh.
Okay. So, you know, they, you know, back earlier, the ballerina music box that we saw at the beginning is playing a few bars on its own and everybody's freaking out because this music box keeps like, you know, just turning on by itself or whatever. And after a few performances, John wonders if she's pointing. He's like, she's pointing at something. She's pointing at the rug. And so they're like, okay. And they pick up the rug. There's nothing under the rug. And then John was like, maybe it's a different rug. And so then all of this is like, okay, that's like, how did you, that's not a normal thing. It's not a normal thing to be like, the music box is pointing at something. Oh, it's pointing at the rug. Oh, maybe it means a different rug. It really sounds like, John, you hid something and you really want the group to find it, you know?
I definitely haven't been here before.
Yeah, so it was kind of suspicious.
Yeah.
But also, we know that he's been having visions of this house. Mm-hmm. And so they're all, like, thinking, like, he has some sort of psychic connection with the house that might lead him to know something, things that he wouldn't otherwise. And so he says, maybe a different rug. So sure enough, under the rug in the living room, they find the markings of the circle of Martha's original seance. So it was like carved or painted or whatever into the wooden floor that was hidden by the rug. And so as they're discussing it, thumps are heard from another room. And this is, it switches over to some handheld footage on this one, which made it a little creepier. They go to investigate, like the whole group is like walking slowly until they locate the door that the noises are coming from. And then Brian slowly opens the door. And then a bird bursts out, flying into the living room and lays dying right on the seance seal. So it's like a kind of another jumpy scare type moment.
Omen.
A lot of tension.
Bad omens.
Yeah.
Well, I think, did you mention that there was like when they got to the house, there was the painting of the owner.
Yeah, the painting of the grackles.
Then the birds there. They're like, that's by, they were...
The devil uses them to communicate with his followers or something. Like, that's the symbolism of the bird.
The lady.
Jules.
She was kind of narrating the reasons for different things for the viewers.
Yeah. Well, another thing that I didn't mention that I was, like, thought was kind of stupid. So there's, like, that giant painting in there. Mm-hmm. And, like, when they first walk in and they, like, walk up to it and they're like, oh, that's her. That's Martha Livingston. We're talking about a woman who was, like, in her late teens in 1988. And they have this, like, massive oil painting of her in, like, a gown with, like, a bouffant hairdo. I'm like, that's not what we were doing in 88. Like, it should have been a glamour shot. Like, why would you have this giant oil painting of a woman who presumably was, like, born in the 70s?
Yeah, that's more of like you go to the mall and get your glamour shot.
Right.
Not.
Yeah.
You're not having a city.
So, I mean, like, this was definitely spooky, but if you actually were thinking about any of it, we're like, that doesn't make sense. That wouldn't be there.
You go to the mall, like any other teenage red-blooded American in the 80s.
Yeah, it would have been a blow-up of your, you know, sixth-grade picture with, like, the braces and the side ponytail.
And your headgear.
Your total headgear.
I guess, God, I didn't make that connection. In my mind, it was, like, an old relative or something.
Yeah,
like their original.
But they say
Martha,
they're
Loving,
like, I get
Livingston.
That's her. That's Martha. Like they say that, and it's like,
yeah,
stupid.
Yeah, I completely just gleaned over that. Like, didn't even think about it. Maybe I was like, I can't accept that.
Yeah, no, my mind is blocking that out because it's so
portrait.
Ridiculous.
Okay.
Okay, and so back to the investigation. Tests show that the blood in the milk chute was Brian's. But Lewis wonders, did he go through as a victim or as a killer? So, like, did he escape? He's a victim and he was being pursued and he escaped that way? Mm-hmm. Or he's the killer and that's how he fled the scene?
Yeah.
And so John tells Elizabeth that Brian was obsessed with the house, and he says the phrase, he was intent on taking things too far. So John is definitely supporting this narrative that, like, Brian just lost it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also not being like, you know, Brian's a psycho killer, because he's saying the house did it, like the we woke the house up, like, but he's, you know, attributing the actual acts to Brian.
Yeah, he's kind of saying that he's being like a tool. He's just a tool or a conduit, or like, this is something.
And he's also such a tool.
He's such a tool.
In many ways, he's a tool. Okay, so back in time, Brian wanders the house. He's viewing things via his camera screen. He sees a man in a doorway, but then when he raises his flashlight, the man is gone. So there's still, you know, things appearing.
Now, spooky stuff.
Now it's Sam wandering around, and after some tense moments in a bedroom, there's a really good jump scare of these, like, ugly arms shooting out from under a bed and grabbing him. But then when he looks under, there's nothing there. And then we're following Jules around. Her survey of the house offers another glimpse of an unknown figure. Then she finds a creepy child's bedroom full of all these creepy dolls. So we're just seeing all of them just kind of wandering throughout the house and just kind of seeing what they find. And all of them are experiencing, you know, the house's activity.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Donnie is showing. So Donnie's the tech guy. And so he's at the, you know, I said there was a big computer station set up with all his screens and his equipment. He's showing Michelle and John his hypersensitive microphone. And with it, they can hear the flying of an insect. And then his next device shows their three heartbeats. So Michelle, John, and Donnie's heartbeats. And then when a fourth appears, John and Michelle kind of share this little, like, secret smile, thinking, you know, like, oh, that's the baby's heartbeat. Like, mm-hmm. that's why we're hearing this fourth one, but then a fifth heartbeat appears, and then a sixth, and then more. And then they're like, oh, well, she's not pregnant with octuplets, so something else is going on here. And then a terrifying demon face appears beside Michelle on the camera, and then a painting on the wall bursts into flame. So, like, all of this, you know, activity, this intense activity happening all at once. So John runs for a fire extinguisher, but after the flames are out, he can't explain how he knew where it was.
Yeah.
And then when he points to the closet where he got it, that's where we first see the axe that later becomes the murder weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So then Sam asks John if he's seen the room before, because we know, you know, he's had these visions. And he says yes. And to prove it, John starts describing in detail the wall behind him. So he's not facing it, but he's like, there's a rip in the paper and under the rip is this blah, blah, blah. And then, like, tension is building as they're, like, validating that what he's describing is true. And he actually does, you know, he knows this room, and he's just speaking in this monotone. And then finally he goes, there's something else. There's a woman behind Jules. And, like, right after he says that, suddenly Jules is jerked from behind and dragged screaming down the hall. So that's, like, a pretty intense, like, cool moment. And they chase after her. When they get there, all of a sudden, now they're all having an argument about whether or not they should stay in the house. Like,
yeah.
Like, this has gone too far, kind mm-hmm. of thing. John wants to leave, but Brian is like, no, this is what we came for. This is what we've always been looking for and hoping for. And then once Jules is, like, able to breathe again or whatever, she's agreeing with Brian. Like, she's like, no, we got to stay. We got to do this. I don't want to go. And so, but John's like, fine, well, we're fucking out of here. And so John and Michelle head away. But Brian goes after them to try and keep them from leaving, revealing to them that he knows that John's mom was there the night of the murder. So he actually had that piece of information, and John didn't know that he knew, and Brian hadn't told anyone else. So Brian again, like, manipulates and preys on John's feelings about his mom and convinces them to stay for the evocation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jules is also like, I know that was scary, and mm-hmm. I'm pretty freaked out, but, you know, do you know how many years people have just been laughing at us,
right,
and being like, that's not really a thing. You mm-hmm. guys are crazy, yada, yada. She's like, this is our, like, one chance to get yeah. something kind of solid
mm-hmm.
to prove that.
We're finally going to get proof.
Yeah, to prove that, like, this is not bullshit. This mm-hmm. is actually really, you know, serious.
Yeah.
And this is our chance. So even though she was the one who's kind of essentially assaulted, she's,
yeah.
like, very much on board and doesn't yeah. want to leave. So she, I feel like her kind of interacting too with John and whatever. It's like she seems a little bit more sympathetic, less aggro and annoying.
Yeah.
Than Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely have like different, they both have the same intensity of what they're seeking, but they present it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Wait, my question, I don't remember. Did Michelle know?
No. Because okay. She was like, how could you not tell me that? Like, how did you never right. tell me that?
Okay. I had forgotten if she knew or didn't. Mm. It's kind of a big,
big thing to leave out. Okay. And so now the investigation, they're recovering more footage. Some of it shows Donnie's killing with the axe. And then Lewis gets a report of a stolen truck from a neighbor's house. And he was like, why didn't I hear about this before? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. The owner didn't realize it was gone until he woke up the next morning to go to work.
So they're like, okay, well, you know, then that Brian must have stolen the truck. Like, mm-hmm. is the assumption then. Back earlier, John is trying to calm himself before they, you know, begin the ritual. And he's in the bathroom and looking in the mirror. He has a vision of one of those grackles, a bird, like emerging violently from his mouth. And then obviously it's like gone. He imagined the whole thing. So it was like pretty He's upsetting. Like,
I shouldn't have taken acid before I came here. That was bad.
I picked a bad week to stop sniffing glue.
Yeah. Bad mistakes.
Okay, so then the group sits around the seal on the living room floor holding hands. Brian reads from a book while Jules calls to the spirits.
And she's also very adamant about some rules.
Yeah.
That, you know, don't let go of anyone's hand. You have to keep it.
This circle, that's how we're going to contain whatever we summon.
Yes. Yeah. And if it's broken, that's like a big, big, big no-no.
Right. So suddenly all of the candles that they've lit all go out at once and wind begins to blow through this, interior room. And on the infrared camera screen, Brian sees a whole crowd of entities standing behind John. Suddenly Michelle starts experiencing pains in her stomach. And then lights start flashing and we see locks turning on all the doors. So this is what, you know, we had been told earlier that they got locked in. John wants to help Michelle, but Jules is screaming at him not to break the circle. Like, don't let go of the hands, like, whatever. But then John hears his mother's voice, and then he turns and sees her next to him instead of Michelle. And she's smiling at him, and she keeps telling him, let go, let go, let go. But then suddenly her face becomes the demon face, and John releases Michelle's hand, because naturally you don't want to keep holding the demon's hand.
Yeah, and the demon looks a lot like the Conjuring witch.
Yeah.
A lot like that. Like, ew, scary.
Yeah.
Like the one that was on top of the dresser when the girls were, like, freaking out in their room. That's what it looks like as it, like, lunged at them.
So yeah, and we're just getting, like...
get away from me.
Yeah. Ooh. The really, like, the quick visions of the face and, you know, not clear, like it's in darkness or it's in flashing light or whatever. And so it's the scariness is heightened because it's not like a prolonged, like, this is the witch. Look mm-hmm. at her for a while. Look at her do stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like a glimpse. And so that, you know, makes it really scary.
Yeah.
Outside, the street lamp bursts forth in flames as it lights. So, like, oh, master's home. We're open for guests.
Somehow this teenage girl is the master. Sorry.
Something like that.
Or the devil.
Yeah. The devil's master. I kind of interpreted it, as the arrival. Like, once the circle was broken, then what they had summoned was now present in the house. Yeah. And so that was the master mm-hmm. that was now home. Inside the house, the group realizes that they're locked in. And then Michelle just runs off. Like, that's really helpful right now, Michelle. Just run into the house.
What was the other movie we watched recently where people kept running off? Oh, The Purge.
Oh, yeah.
People kept being like, oh, God.
Here I am.
I'm going to run
away.
Gone
again.
And we're like, why? Why are you running away?
Why don't you just stay together, assholes?
Okay.
So John follows Michelle, and he ends up finding Brian in a room staring at and muttering to the huge painting of Martha. But John's approaching him from behind, and John puts a hand on Brian's shoulder. Brian turns around, and his gaping mouth is full of gushing blood. Like, very, very upsetting image. And I should point at this point, Brian's also wearing these glasses that we've seen a couple of times before that have, like, a camera built onto them. So, right. Like, when you have these glasses on, there's a camera recording everything that you're seeing. And so Brian's wearing those glasses at this point. Mm-hmm. So John naturally runs out. He's like, I already didn't like you. Bye-bye now.
Yeah. Now and you're screeching at me
blood pouring out of your mouth. And so back to the investigation, John is telling Elizabeth that Brian became possessed. And the cops are, again, watching the footage of Donnie's death that they've recovered and noting that it was the camera glasses that allowed the killer to record while killing. They're like, how is he recording this when we see both of his hands wielding this axe and killing this person? And they're like, oh, he had these glasses with the camera on it. And we just saw Brian wearing those glasses.
Right.
So, you know, everything's kind of, you know, aligning up. Then a witness report of a crash, like a car crash, leads Lewis to send teams searching a wooded area behind the house for the missing truck. So John, like still in the investigation, John tells Elizabeth how Brian attacked him with an axe. And then she immediately reports this to Lewis. She goes, he says it, Brian's the killer. Like John says that Brian's the killer. Then Lewis runs off to check out the crashed truck that the search team did find, leaving Elizabeth to try and decipher the text used in the seance. He's like, I gotta go check out this car wreck. Here's the book they were using. Translate it. And she's like, why me? Like,
he's like, you're a doctor.
You know Latin, right?
She's like, oh, okay.
She'll find. I'm a woman. I'll figure out how to do it.
Google image search.
Pretty much.
Jesus Christ. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, people. Okay, so he leaves her with the book and he goes off to check out the truck. They find, not Lewis, but the first two cops that got to the scene find Brian in the truck. He's alive, but he's unconscious until he's not. And then he grabs the gun off of the cop and shoots him. Nothing like being a cop and getting shot with your own gun. And then he runs off. Brian runs off with the cop's gun. And he ends up at the same gas station down the road that we've already seen multiple times. Meanwhile, Elizabeth reports her research to Lewis, like you said, her Google image search when she, you know, went online and was like looking into all of this, that the seance was intended to free an imprisoned demon. And in order for it to succeed, everyone involved in the seance has to die. And then the demon will leave through a pure human soul. We're like, okay, so we're trying to align that with the characters that whose fate is still uncertain, and then also with the story of what happened when Martha and her friends did the seance.
Yeah.
So now there's a hostage standoff between Lewis and Brian at the gas station. Brian is inside, you know, he's knocked out the clerk or whatever, and he's got the gun, and Lewis is outside with, you know, some cop cars or whatever, trying to talk him down. And a walkie-talkie is tossed into Brian. But they're all on the same frequency. And so back in the barn, John hears like the voices on the walkie-talkie, like knows that it's been given to Brian or whatever. And so, I lost my spot. John manages to grab one of the walkies in the barn on the other end and starts shouting into it about finding Michelle. Like, where is she? What did you do with her? Where's Michelle? Thinking that, you know, he's talking to Brian. So Brian screams incoherently into the walkie. Like, there's just this insane howling scream. And the force coming through the walkie throws John across the barn room and into a wall. And he begins having a seizure. So back in the gas station, Brian continues to scream into the walkie and sending John into cardiac arrest. Like, this scream is having some crazy, insane effect on John. But finally, Brian, kind of pulls his gun like he's going to fire on Lewis and gets shot and killed. So as soon as Brian is shot, John immediately recovers. He's like, oh, I'm better now. And then at the gas station, before he dies, Brian grabs for Lewis's cross necklace. He's like asking me, he's like, where's Michelle? Where, like, you know, before you die, like, tell me, where's this girl that we're looking for, whatever. And Brian doesn't say anything. He just grabs this cross necklace. And then, you know, moments later, he dies and they realize that his tongue was missing. So that would be why he didn't tell them anything. Very convenient.
Yeah.
Meredith loves this. But anyway, so with the cross as a clue, and this is like the biggest reach. He's like, he grabbed my cross necklace. That must mean he remembers seeing a random crate full of crosses in the house. The cross crate. Every house has got one. A milk chute and a cross crate. So he identifies a crawl space in the house that they didn't know was there because, mm-hmm. you know, it was blocked by the cross crate. And Michelle is in there and she's alive. Like, she's tied up or whatever, but she's alive. And then I said, but just when the story should be ending, the cops show Elizabeth something on a screen that changes everything because they're still going through footage and unscrambling footage. And they show her something and she's like, but we don't know what she's seen. Mm-hmm. Before Michelle is taken away from the house, or out of the crawl space, she's whispering to Lewis. She goes, same room, same room. And so Lewis returns to the crawl space. And this is, so one of this, like, these revelation scenes at the end of horror films. So it's kind of like when we were talking about The Others, and it was like the moment where Grace found the death portraits of the characters is at the same time the children found the graves
yeah.
of those characters. Like, it will hop back and forth between a couple of different settings because it's a big reveal moment.
Right.
Right. So you're getting like all of these random facts really quickly from different settings. And so while Lewis is going back to the crawl space, you know, based on Michelle's comment, Elizabeth confronts John with what she saw on the screen, footage proving that it was him and not Brian who orchestrated the killings. But she says to John, the ritual didn't work because Michelle is still alive and John is still alive. And she's like, she researched the ritual. She's like, everybody has to die in order for the, you know, the demon to be released. And here we've got two people still alive. And then John says to him, you're wrong. And just as he's saying that to Michelle, we see Lewis discover John's dead body hanging from a noose. In the same crawl space where Michelle was tied up. And so you're like, wait, what the fuck? What's going on? And then we see a montage of all of the participants' deaths one by one. So John killing each person one by one throughout the evening, ending with John hanging himself in the crawl space. And then a flock of birds rips out of his mouth, kind of like we saw with the one bird earlier, and then reassembles into the body that Lewis found on the floor when he first entered the house.
Mm-hmm.
So, stop laughing. This was masterfully concocted.
Okay.
Okay, I only have one more paragraph, and then you can say what you gotta say. Okay. Fine. So, now that Lewis has found John's body, Elizabeth is in the barn, and so Lewis runs to the barn, and Elizabeth begins to mysteriously choke. And then John reveals that Michelle is now his vessel and he'll be free as soon as she crosses the seal inside the house. Lewis breaks into the barn because the door's all, you know, like he can't get it open. And John is suddenly vanished. Lewis tries to reassure Elizabeth that, like, no, he's dead. He's dead inside the house. We found John. He's dead in the house. And she's like, no. Like, and so in her desperation to prove Lewis wrong that he's not dead, she goes to get the little camera that's been on the tripod this whole time and plays back the video recording, which shows her speaking to an empty chair.
Like, nobody's there.
There's nobody there. Like, we hear her side of the conversation of lines that we've already heard Elizabeth deliver, and there's no one in the chair, and there's no response.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, whoa, my God, mind-blowing, right? And so then... Shut up. The final scene is Michelle riding away in an ambulance, and the EMT confirming that her baby was going to be, quote, just fine.
Uh-huh.
And that's the end of Demonic.
Yep.
What'd you think, Meredith?
I had me for a little while.
Okay.
And it's just them. Yes. They tried so hard to make us hate Brian so much. Mm-hmm. I was like, he's not him. Obviously, it's not him because they're trying so hard to make him the worst person ever. Mm-hmm. So it has to be the nice guy who's her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, oh, I don't know. I need to know about my mother. I care about my mom so much.
I have these visions of my mom, my dead mom.
I got to find out more about my mom. And so you're like, well, obviously he's the one who did something terrible.
You just
terrible.
Don't trust blondes.
I don't trust blondes. I don't trust nice guys.
Mm.
So then everything played out exactly as I had suspected. And with the exception of him turning into birds.
You're like, that was a little twist.
So I was like, okay. And then I was like, so now she's having a devil baby, demon baby. It's like the more demon babies, like in the, what's it called? That movie we just watched. Oh, the one with Hilary Swank.
And she had the reaping?
Yeah, more demon babies.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, we need to have just more themes of just baby demon children. Baby,
yeah.
Demon
like children. A whole maternity ward in a hospital full of demon babies. So it was like your main complaint then that it was just predictable?
I think so. I did like a lot of the, I liked the setting. I thought that was kind of a fun, you know, Louisiana swamp. Like, what's not to like about that?
Right.
That's fun.
Yeah.
And the old abandoned house and some people trying to do ghost hunting. That's kind of fun. I just felt like the characters weren't fleshed out entirely. I didn't mind Jules. And then a few of the other people, I was like, oh, yeah. You know, like, I kind of cared about them. But I think it's sometimes when you make people so unlikable,
it's too obvious.
Yeah. I'm like, this was a little predictable. I did like the detective. I liked him, and I also liked Maria Bello too. She's great.
Yeah.
So those people kind of brought life to the movie a lot, I want to say. But then I think my expression was just when it was like the big reveal, I was just like,
your eyes rolled out of your head.
Yeah. But so I think, though, there's a big divided group who has seen this. Either they really like it or they hated it.
Oh, really? Okay.
So that's what I saw on, like, Reddit. I'm like, some people are like, oh, I love this movie. And some people are like, that was trash. Oh. So I'm like, can there be, like, in the middle?
Yeah.
So I think I liked a lot of the setup. I liked that it was a little bit inspired by Handheld, but not. I think it 2015, there was a lot of handheld, like, found footage movies coming out, too.
Yeah, I thought about this. I had this tentatively on my list when we were doing that summer theme of found footage movies. But the majority of the movie isn't. They use it very intentionally, and I think effectively.
Some of it was still a little shaky cam when it was supposed to be not found footage part.
No, I think
where it had, like, the detective, it was like, that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, what's it trying
to do?
What
are you
trying to do right now? Like, I just felt, I don't know. I felt like
it was disjointed
a little bit. And I felt like they hadn't fleshed out entirely, like, the story very well. And it was a little bit disconnected. And
it was chaotic. But I kind of looked at it as, like, that was kind of the point, was that, like, you know, this detective is having to piece together what happened at this crime scene. And he's got, you know, this one witness as a piece of evidence. He's got the house as evidence. And they have this, like, slowly exposed the footage from inside the house that they're just getting a bit at a time, little by little. And he's trying to, like, do all this. But there's, like, the kind of the ticking clock, because they have these two people that are either victims or victim and suspect that they can't locate. You know, and so I think that I liked that vibe to it, that it was like, you know, we gotta figure out what happened here. We gotta piece this all together because we've got to find this girl. We gotta, you know, if there's a killer on the loose, we gotta find this guy. And, you know, then anytime I like movies that do that jumping back and forth in time, because, you know, it's one story, but they're, like, telling it like it's two, and they can introduce pieces of information at very intentional times to mislead you or to then reveal to you, like, what, you know, what the actual story is.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what this was entirely about, because then you even had the contrast of what John was telling Elizabeth and then what, and, you know, up until a certain point, what he was telling her aligned with what we were seeing in all of the flashback footage.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's not until the end that you start to, you know, realize that's, you know, that he's not just the sweet, innocent boyfriend who's worried about his pregnant girlfriend because this other guy went crazy. Honestly, I've probably seen this maybe four or five times, and I don't remember the
when I watched it the first time, if I was really buying in, like if I was sold on Brian being the bad guy, mm-hmm. I definitely would not have predicted the ending. Mm-hmm. Like knowing that like, oh, he's not even there.
Yeah.
You know, like this is just an apparition that everybody's seeing that isn't really there because this guy's dead in the house.
Right.
Like there's no way I would have seen that coming. But I don't really remember if I saw through the like, you know, kind of obvious effort to make Brian seem like a villain.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, and I don't try to, I am an empty vessel when it comes to movies. Like, I don't try to figure them out. I don't try to, like, guess at what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think I enjoy them more because of it.
Probably. But they say it's a symptom of high anxiety.
Yes.
As being able to say that, like, what happens at the end of, like, oh, it's so-and-so.
Yeah. I just had a safer childhood than you did.
Maybe. I think I watched it and I was like, oh, it's John? I don't know why I keep forgetting. I keep getting John. Brian and John because they're just so very like generic.
Yeah, names. White boy names. Yeah.
Yeah. John, I'm like, what's the big reveal that shows how John is culpable and how he...
Yeah, he's not just the nice guy victim.
What's the reveal that it was him the whole time?
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to be? Because she's like, oh, I watched something... put handcuffs back on him.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? Why?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, I found something out. And then it's like, but then it wasn't him anyway. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I also, because I didn't mention that at one point she did also watch interview footage with John's mom from after the original murders. And that's when, like, once she had the information of the nature of the seance, that everybody's supposed to die and then a pure spirit or a pure soul leaves, that we're like, okay, well, everybody didn't die that first time around because John's mom survived. But... you know, I guess like the fetus is the pure soul, because are we just assuming that John's mom did not qualify? Because if John's mom qualified as a pure soul, then she would have been the demon.
Yeah.
Right? She would have, it would have escaped through her when the first time the seance was performed.
Mm-hmm.
And this time it only escaped because it had Michelle's fetus to possess.
Yeah, and that was not entirely fleshed out either. Like, why was he having these visions?
Yeah,
and then,
I mean, if the demon, I mean, that kind of, they didn't explain it, but you can kind of rationalize it, because like the demon would have had, you know, some connection, and then his mom had died, and so if it's like the demon using his mom to try, because the demon wants to lure people back into the house, mm-hmm. so that they'll perform this ritual so it can leave.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that the demon just like manipulating the connection between the connection the demon would have had with his mom and then his mom's spirit and then with him to just try and get people back into the house to do this thing.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's something that we've seen in a lot of scary movies, of that idea of like demons soliciting victims.
I don't know.
I feel like, maybe, like with Amityville Horror, for example, it's like they just moved into the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't lured there. In fact, the house told them to get out.
Sure.
So, and in all the Conjuring movies or whatever, it was, yeah, I don't know, the idea that a demon who was trapped in some sort of, like, location, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, in The Nun, were they trying to, like, get people there? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, in the very beginning, what the nun was trying to escape via the human nuns.
Mm-hmm.
Valak was trying to get and escape through the human nuns. But, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a...
We'll have to, like, look up more. Any movies where something supernatural is trying to lure victims into the home or the church or wherever they were.
Yeah.
Being ooky spooky.
Because, like, most of the time, it seems like the if it's a demon, it goes to you, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like in Insidious. Like, mm-hmm. they went to... the Lamberts because they recognized the empty vessels. or whatever. Yeah. And then if it's a haunting, it's in a house, and then people just oopsie poopsie move into the haunted house. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's interesting that this one was that the entity like summoned them.
Yeah.
To try and get its freedom.
But Ghoul would, when they moved away, the Bagul would go with them.
Would go with them. Yeah, that's true.
And then that's how it traveled.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Interesting. Not this movie, though.
Oh, I love this movie.
Maybe I'll watch it again. I just was so...
So you've only seen it just the first time?
I've only seen it the once, and then I was just a little bit... I was like, okay.
Underwhelmed?
Yeah, but I did like I said, I did like the performances of the psychologist and the detective. So yeah. They kind of brought the movie up a few notches for me because I enjoy them. Yeah. So.
Alrighty. Well, hopefully.
And I paid $3 to watch it too.
See, and I just bought it.
I'm glad I didn't buy it.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. Like I said, when I'd had it on our list for a long time of ones that I knew I really liked and would like to do sometime, and it has always been on Netflix.
Of course.
Like the four times I've seen it in the past, it was on Netflix. And then we picked it for this episode, and I go, and it's not there anymore.
Isn't that typical?
Yeah.
Like but everyone's, then, it's streaming forever.
Mm-hmm. And then
like
when you need it.
Like 28 days later, it's like, oh, it's nowhere. Sorry.
No, it doesn't exist. You made that up.
I know.
Yeah. But then, like, because I knew I loved it, and it was when there's a very, like, minimal price difference between renting and buying, it's kind of like, might I ever watch this again? Okay, go ahead and buy. Because it was, like, $3.99 to rent or $9.99 to buy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, sure. I really like this
you
movie.
You already have the sunk cost, and you already have watched it several times.
Yeah, and I know
so
that I like it.
Justify so. Buying it.
Yeah.
Well... I mean, I'm glad I watched it.
Yay!
You know, I think I've seen it come up be like stuff you might like on Netflix, but now it's not there anymore. But it's a, I'm like,
Yeah. Well, and it's also one where we talked about like scary movies with these just totally generic titles where you confuse all the time because like demonic, demon, demify, devil, like
possessed,
possession, the first possession, the possessed, last possession,
past possessives,
the exorcist, the exorcism of this person, the exorcism of that person, the last exorcism, the first
the possession
exorcism
of Deborah Logan,
yeah,
the possession of Emily Rose,
then there's just
the possession, the demons,
yeah, and then it's like ritualistic, the rite. The exorcist's right, the Pope's right, the Pope's exorcist's right. Like, God. This demonic is just, like, the most basic.
It gets me all confused.
Yeah.
I keep referring to talk to me as let me in or let the right one in. I don't know why.
Because they're commands. Let me in and talk to me. Do both these things.
Yeah, and they always get me confused.
Yeah.
So, oh, interesting. I think, maybe I mentioned this on the podcast. I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if this is real or not. But my sister-in-law sent me a reel saying that It Follows is going to have a sequel called They Follow.
I think I've seen something for that, too.
So
yeah.
I really hope that's true because I loved the first one so much. But
You're not afraid that like a sequel would be hugely disappointing?
I don't think so. But It Follows is another one that got me. I'm like, They Follow, It Follows.
It's following the follower.
Like, I kept getting so confused about that title, too.
Yeah.
They just get me... kerfuffled. I don't know.
Well, when you have as many movies in your brain as we do,
yeah,
it's bound to happen, especially as our brains age and ossify and turn to dust and mush.
It's all, you know, combining together titles and scary stuff. I don't know.
Scary, spooky.
But I do want to see the monkey soon.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
The monkey?
Yeah.
Monkey Shines? No.
No, Monkey Shines is a different one. That was like episode 3.
That's like our lowest listened to episode. It's like
classic.
Like nobody listened to it.
Yeah.
But we do actually have listeners in Australia.
Ooh.
More than any other place.
Wow, that's interesting.
The United States, of course, obviously more there, but Australia is a big listener community.
Very nice.
So they want to listen to us be ridiculous and me be like, I don't like that.
Do they like make fun of our accents, do you think?
Probably not. I don't know.
That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah. I do say like a lot because I'm an elder millennial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we invented that.
I know. I wish I could stop. I just can't. It's just part of my,
you know. It's a verbal crutch.
It is.
You know, some people it's some mm-hmm. people it's or you know, like people have it.
It's my verbal clutch. That's wrong. Crutch. And I can't stop. And I hear myself do it and I cringe and I get so, I'm just like, oh, that's so annoying. But also I can't, I'm not going to go to like take a class or anything. Like
go to speech therapy. I'm not going to speech therapy. Get one of those hypnotist tapes to listen to while
stop
you sleep.
Stop saying the word like.
Unless it is necessary.
When you're emphasizing something or taking a pause.
Yeah.
I wish I could stop, but I just can't. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah. So for next time. Mm-hmm. This is a memorable title, The Bye Bye Man.
Yes. And I'm excited to do this one because I very much enjoyed it.
Okay, so we're going into this one knowing we both love this movie.
And it's definitely weird and took weird twists and turns, and I hope.
And it has also always been streaming, so we can expect
I hope it's still streaming
that at any moment.
And easy to find.
Yeah.
But I think
they're removing it from streaming as we speak.
God, of course they would. but I'm excited because I know a lot of different movies are coming out that are horror movies that I'm thrilled, and they're doing remakes or sequels or maybe like long awaited follow ups to movies that we really enjoy. So I'm hopeful that it'll be more stuff will come out that'll be you know,
give us things to feel good about.
I just need something to watch that will get me out of this
reality
funk that we're all in right now. But anyway, good discussion. Sorry, I don't think I shit on the movie.
No, you
too
didn't.
Much.
You didn't. I didn't feel attacked.
Yeah, I was just like, you know.
I mean, you were way harder on Leprechaun, so
I will always stand by that. Although Robert Davis is a treasure, and we love him. But
yeah.
Okay, until next time. Bye.
Goodbye.